Welcome to the London Welsh Rugby Club podcast.
Our guest this week is former London Welsh fullback Matt Vines. Matt came to London Welsh as a 19-year-old and got capped in the first team with Mike Gosling as head coach. Then Clive Griffiths joined a couple of years later and brought in a few professional players from rugby league. And Matt, who was a student at the time, found himself training with them weekdays and then showing them the delight of the Kingston nightlife. He found his most consistent period as a player when Aidan Davis came in as head coach and built a great squad with camaraderie who played for each other. Some great stories about the tours, and with Matt winning player of the year and beating the post-war try scoring record as well. He did have a wobble and went to Rugby Lions, and you can find out why and what actually happened. Matt came back to Welsh for a few years, and then when Aidan left, he wasn't offered the contract with London Welsh. I went to London Scottish with a few other players. Matt loves London Welsh, and that shined through in this podcast. Enjoy. Welcome to the pod, for London Welsh player, Matt Vines. How are you, Matt?
Yeah, good, thanks, Gareth. Not too bad. Not bad at all.
Good stuff. I think I saw you back at the club post-Christmas for someone's birthday celebration. Were you there? And whose birthday was that?
Yeah, that was Richie Elliott. He was 50, the weasel. So he had quite a few boys that turn up. Obviously, loads of boys do dry jam, but there was a good little turnout to celebrate his 50th with him.
And do you manage to get to the club often at all? Do you get back to London Welsh?
Not as much as I'd like. I've moved down to like East Sussex way, so it is quite a way. But the boys do get together from my era. But I'd love, you know, like I do get on the emails with some of the old stalwarts that try and get people together for old player dues and stuff. So I am going to try a bit harder because I get a bit of grief from Matthew Foxfield and Dick Pugh for just taking too much out of that club and not giving a lot of bit back. But so yeah, all good though. We'll get there.
And your sort of generation of players, am I right thinking it's a name for you? Is it, I'm not sure if it's the Red Herrings, the Martini Club, there's quite a few little, I won't say cliques, but like former player groups who sort of get together independently of the club a bit, isn't there?
Yeah, we call them Red Herrings. So we do like a tour every year, which is, it started off on kind of bigger ones. When we were playing, this is where it's from, when we were playing, I think in 2004, we ended up going to San Diego and L.A., and then the year after that, we went to Miami. And then it kind of went from there. And then we did Vegas and Scottsdale and and Houston. And then we just kept, there's a great, great bunch of boys. So they wanted to be with each other. So we kind of just caught this red herrings thing and just carried on either doing a weekend away in the summer and then a big Christmas lunch, which is always getting about 40 or 50 of the lads there. So it's still going strong. So not the Martini Club. I think Porky's the only one that jumps in and out of the both. Yeah, we got a good little nucleus of players there, or ex-players, should I say.
No, that's amazing. Look, I think there's a former player lunch on April the 6th, which is the last home game of the season. And I believe there's absolutely loads of people coming back to that. I don't know if you've heard about that in your group at all.
I was on that email. I'll definitely try and get down for that. Yeah. I think that I can't remember who sends the emails around, but a few of the boys, like the ones I said, was Fitzy and Pewey have already be confirmed with that. So I'll do my best to get there. I love the place. So I love going back there. I went upstairs when I was at Weasel's 50th and they've done the John Dawes room. So there's loads of different memorabilia and it goes through all the different decades and stuff. So it's a lovely walk back down memory lane, some fond memories, just see where the club's been, where it hasn't been or where it should have been or whatever. So, and there's still some of the, you know, the Alakadoos where when I started in 94, they're still there. They're looking, you know, exactly the same, to be honest. We're the only ones that are getting fatter and older. They're looking exactly the same.
Well, look, if you want to get back to that lunch, get in touch with Di Williams because places are booking up fast. We're going to have 200 people in the club having lunch that day, which is bonkers. So if anyone else is listening to this and you, Matt, just book in via Di Williams for that former player lunch. Otherwise, you'll miss out on the lunch. But obviously, You can always come to the game anyway, so as others do, if you can't make a lunch.
Yeah, will do, mate, will do.
Well, look, let's take it back to the beginning. Look, you talk about memory lanes, that sort of thing. So where were you brought up, and when did you start playing rugby?
I started playing rugby at four. I think my dad took me down the local club at four. I grew up in Llantwit Major, and I was there until 18 when I left to go to St Mary's Uni in Twickenham. So I was playing, I was playing for like East Wales under 11s and then the Vale of Glamorgan all the way up to under 14s, 15s. And then I had a couple of years off rugby, played a bit of football and then got back into it under 18s just before I went to uni. And then I don't know how this happened actually, because I wasn't really the particular club before I got to uni, but then I had a call from a guy called David D. in the halls, so he got my number, or he found out, and then he said, "Oh, he was manager of the development side." And then I just went straight down. Like a Welsh boy going to a London college is quite weird. So as soon as the first Saturday came, I was down to London Welsh, and then as soon as you walk in, you're like, "Oh, this is it. This is brilliant." It's like a home from home then. And then I nearly broke my leg in the first game and I didn't go back for a few months. But that was how I first started there. David D. I didn't meet any of the other boys for the first couple of months until I got off this injury. And then after Christmas, I think, I started playing with under like Mike Goslin, I think, was the coach then.
Look, but you jumped quite quickly into London Welsh, which was absolutely fine. But so why did you give up rugby for 2 years, and what brought you back to rugby in your sort of, you know, when you were 15, 16, 17? You know, obviously you're good at lots of sports, or was it just that you just fancied to rest and try something different?
I was just all of them, brilliant at all sport. No, I liked playing football, to be honest. And then from when you've got like under 11s, East Wales, playing in the Arms Park in West Wales, and then it's Vale of Glamorgan, and then I was just exhausted with it, and everyone was just like, more rugby, more rugby. And then I remember saying to my sports teacher, who was Mr. Smith, he said, I don't want to play anymore, and he just hated, he didn't speak to me then. And then I literally didn't play for 2 years. I didn't even play for the school. I was just playing for the football for Llantwit Major first team. I love that. And then out of the blue, I think I must have been 17, second year A-levels maybe, I saw him on the stairs and he said, "Oh, I don't suppose you fancy a trial for the Welsh under 18s. And I was like, "Well, what now?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, I was doing maths at the time. He said, "Well, you missed double maths." I said, "Yeah, whatever." So I just jumped in the car with him and went off to the trial. And he didn't know. He just said, "I'll try and get you a game," because it was something like the third trial. And in those days, they had things like the possibles and the probables or something. And they had like quarters or thirds. And then I managed to get on for the last like 20 minutes. And I ended up scoring a couple of tries and just messed, like basically got in the Welsh squad. Then I didn't actually get in the team that went touring. I was like training down in Sophia Gardens and that with that squad. That got my first back fit then. I think that a couple of years out it was actually a good thing that I got my hunger back.
And who was it around that sort of Wales sort of under 18 camp that would have got on to full honours? You know, would you remember anyone at all?
I think it was Martin Williams and that lot there. I don't remember many people I would have said I trained with there, but yeah. It was that era. I think he was playing at the same time. But as I said, I only got in the squad, and there must have been about 60 lads that got into the squad, and they whittled it down. And then when they asked me how did I get on Saturday, and I said, "Oh, we lost 3-1. They were like, "What?" I played football on Saturday. I thought that was a good thing. Just mix it up. And I don't think they liked that. So yeah, I didn't, not that I probably wasn't good enough anyway, but I didn't get in that squad or the team as
And this is all before sort of regional rugby and things like that. So if you were playing for like Llantwit Major.
Major,
yeah. So where would you, what would be a local sort of local club? Would it be Pontypridd or would it be Cardiff?
It was Bridgend was the closest to Atlantic Major, yeah. But I didn't play a lot for the Atlantic Major rugby club either, because that was the years where, you know, you're not... I did for the under-11s and whatever, but not when you get into the youth side, because that's when I went to the football. But Bridgend was what was the probably the closest big club, yeah.
And so you sort of leave school. What made you come to London?
That was kind of, my mum and dad were teachers, so the uni was the next step. I don't know if it was the right step, but that was just the natural thing to do. So I ended up getting in St Mary's, I think through clearing it was called then, because I didn't get the proper grades. And then, yeah, I was just out the door. I think I just wanted to get out of Atlantic Major anyway. And then rocked up at St Mary's and Twickenham. And then I was always going to go to London Welsh, but David D pushed that straight away.
How did he know who you were then? How did he know how to get hold of you and things like that? Because you must know there's obviously connections somewhere who said, oh yeah,
yeah.
You know, Matt Vines, is that, you know, that's in Matt.
Yeah, but I didn't, as I said, I don't know. Maybe it was just some network along the line. I have no idea. But that was a welcome call, obviously, because getting down there, that was, you do get bullied. People don't believe that. But when you get to St Mary's, and I was one of like three Welsh boys, you're singing the big Wales, Big Fishes of Wales and all that straight away. So to get to London Welsh, where everyone's doing what you grew up with, that was just like, oh, I'm definitely coming back here every weekend now, because it was something to look forward to. You weren't getting sheep shagger shepherd at you every time you walked down the street in St Mary's. So yeah, it was brilliant.
And you say it's a home from home, and you so David D got you playing in the Griffins first, like under 19s and the 21s. And didn't like people. Didn't Josh Lucy play with you at one stage? Was he in that squad?
Not the Griffins. It was the development. I think Ed played. Ed Lucy. Obviously, Tom Lucy. He was a good pal for the years when I got to with even Mike Gosling. He was there from 1995 or that era. But Dave D was just the development manager. So, and that was a team that it wasn't really a team that trained. It was kind of just the boys that were free on a Saturday, and they could be in different unis all over the place that wanted to play for London Welsh Development. So whenever you turned up, you've got boys that you have never met before. So it was quite difficult, because you wouldn't be able to have any kind of cohesion there. It was a bit of a mix and match every Saturday, but it was something, you know, and if obviously he would report back to Gosling, I suppose it was at the time, who was playing well and who needed to go up to either seconds or the first team.
But you look at that, you know, that sort of exposure enabled you to get a first team appearance with age 19 in a friendly. Do you know where that first team appearance was?
Yeah, Newport, wasn't it?
Oh, I've got Penarth in my records.
Oh, no, it was. No, you're right. It was Penarth. You're right. It was Penarth. Yeah, that's right.
Do you remember much about that? Because it's quite a big thing. So it was your first senior start for London Welsh.
Yeah, no, I don't remember too much about that, to be honest. I think it was pissing down with rain. So as a fullback, I just kind of switch off on those days. But that's where it all started. I think with those boys, though, as soon as I got into that little, like the on the radar with Gosling, that was Andy Tucker's crew. Like, he was a captain. There was people like Craig Raymond, Geraint Phillips, Rod Phillips, Dave Lubliner, Di Harries, Alan Samuels. There was like Herbie. I'll talk about him later. But and that they were the ones that would kind of, they were so friendly. From when I look back, it was like a little boy going into the, oh, he's a student, we'll get him all the drinks, all that stuff. So they really did make you feel welcome there. And it was a great laugh. And there was like, you know, when you get into that kind of, not from a, like a squad stuff or first and second, it didn't matter. They were just, there were jugs flying around on a Saturday, Squeak was on the piano, and it was just like, there was Porky and Nigel Reese would do these games with everyone, and it was like and Reesey would be like, right, boys, you know, concentrate because it's going to ruin your evening. And everyone was playing Fizz Buzz, big tables of 20. And they, it was just brilliant. It was just like, not that it was just it's just to go for the drink. It was a good standard as well. And everyone was like proper committed to that Saturday. And they all had like bigger jobs, but they would literally buy into it on a Saturday and travel around to Nidney and places like that and get the shit kicked out of us. But then we'd be on the bus on the way back. And it was a good first kind of experience to get into senior rugby for me.
That's brilliant because, you know, towards the end of that season, you played some league games you know, under my guys, and we got promoted to National 3, which is the level we're at now. So I don't know if it was just Nat 1, 2, 3 then, but on what sort of actual, how many leagues there were. But yeah, you made quite a material difference and helped the side get promoted. So it must have felt quite good at such a tender age.
Yeah, and looking back, it's like a lifetime ago, a different one as well. Honestly, you sometimes you get the programs, or I can like have a chat like this and think shit, and things trigger you to remember other stuff, and then you think, oh wow, that's what happened there, and being part of that, and it was good crowds there as well. Everyone was like well into this whole London Welsh movement, and I think we got promoted, and then things started to change a bit then, yeah.
But yeah, because I think your second season, you started to change. You started playing a bit on the wing, a bit of fullback, and then we haven't got you making a first team appearance for another 6 months. Did you play like Druids, or were you focusing on your university? Did you get injured? You know, what happened in that period?
No, this is the London Mike Gosden, yeah?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Either out of favour, he was a bit quirky with his selection sometimes. But again, yeah, it was probably the uni stuff, and I don't think there was injuries around that time. I did play for a bit in the twos. And then he got called up at the end of that year. I think I started back playing, getting some nods for the first team again at the end of that season.
He got. Sacked as coach, I think, the March or the April of that year. And
year was that? Yeah, that's brilliant.
I think your second or third year of senior rugby. And didn't he come back then to try and coach the team when he'd been sacked or something?
Yeah, I look back and I'd love to, like, with Andy Tucker and Sammy, Alan Samuels and that, to see what their kind of perception was of it. But I remember walking in and going to go up the stairs in the clubhouse, and it was like, 1 o'clock on a Saturday, kickoff was at 3. And then Herbie, which is Mark Herbert, he's a man mountain. He's just standing across the door of the change rooms, and he kind of moved to the side to let me in. And then Gosling come up the stairs afterwards and he wouldn't let him in. He said, the boys don't want you in there. So it was a proper mutiny. I didn't have a clue what was going on. I just sat there thinking, what's happening here? And it was just the senior players said, didn't like the fact that he was doing stuff, or didn't like his tactics, or whatever, but just, I don't know if they could have done it in a less public way, but they just basically kicked him out there. And then I think there was a guy then called Jeff Evans, maybe, that took over a little bit for a few games.
He's one of the guys who's, you know, the Seven Lions in 71, Jeff Evans. Yeah. So he'd been quite involved in the club, but, you know, but maybe as a selector or something.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was always, it was a bit of politics and stuff going on, but I haven't, my head up my arse, because I didn't know what he was doing, really. I still don't now, but like, as far as then, it was just over my head. Okay, Gosling was the first team coach, he did some good stuff for the club. He got, as I said, promoted. But I don't know what that was about. I was just if I got picked, I got picked. I didn't get involved in all the gossip stuff there.
I suppose, you know, when he went, they then brought Clive Griffiths, and there's a sort of shift in the club then, because he was head coach for 3 years and with some ambition. And some new signings. You know, what were your sort of first impression of Clive and some of the rugby league characters he brought in? You know, players and characters.
Yeah, that was a big shift. That was like, that's a transformation. He brought in everything different from a professional perspective, from training, because they're rugby league boys. And then he, just the people that he brought, it was just new faces. It was a shame because of the boys that I just mentioned, like that, whether they're, Craig Raymond was still playing, but a lot of the boys didn't really fit into some of the plans for Clive after that. They might have been getting older anyway. So it did shift. I don't know if the fans and anyone or the people in the clubhouse thought that was a bad shift or not, but he did bring a completely different feel to it, which was nice because it was known we were trying to play better rugby and he brought in some big hitters then. That's when we basically went to, when he first got announced, he took the squad to Neath for a training kind of bonding thing before the season started. And we all knew that Roland Phillips was the captain. But we hadn't met him. So we went to there and we were all in different bunks. And this is Roland Phillips' first introduction to the London Welsh. He stood out there. We all went down in the morning and we all woke up. And I was like, oh, because obviously I knew who he was. I've watched him play for Wales. So it's quite, you're kind of in awe of that. And he came down in the morning and I saw him sitting there and he hadn't introduced himself. So Clive stood up in front of everyone and he said, right, well, boys, I'd like to introduce you to your club captain, Roland Phillips. And Roland got up then and he said, oh, boys, he said, I got in late last night. So I went into one of the rooms and bunking with a few of the boys. And it was like he was doing a stand-up routine. It was brilliant. Because I was thinking, what's he going to say? He goes, well, I couldn't sleep, he said. I was sitting there tossing a turn. I was nervous about what I was going to say to you boys. And then I looked over to the other side of the room and there was Graham Peacock there having a wank. We were, what? And Roland went, he goes, I don't mind stuff like that. But the weird thing was he was just staring right at me. And then from that moment on, I thought, oh, I love this guy. He was brilliant. He could turn it on professional and then turn it completely off and have the best sense of humor and just make me piss myself laughing. So some people that would be quite annoying because you can't do that. You have to have a run up to getting quite motivated for stuff. But he was brilliant. Him and Andy Currier and Simon Ems and these guys, just they were so much fun to be around. And then there's like, but the fitness side, there was like a guy called Chaddy that was, he's a little northern guy that he was so motivated. So you play hard, you train really hard, and then obviously they go and have beers, but they were at the end of their careers, so they wanted to have a bit of fun as well.
So obviously, how that were the mix of professional players and amateur players in that time. So how did they mix and how did they train? Because we used to be a student at this time, so could you train?
Yeah.
Could you train the daytime with the pro players at times, or how did that work?
Well, that's exactly what happened. Yeah, it was a bit weird because they came on some beefy contracts, I should imagine, and they came just to get them up the divisions. So they would come down on like a Tuesday night and then train with a squad. But then Clive would say, oh, are you around Wednesday morning to train and ask me if I could go and train with the boys. But there was only 8 or 9 people. So they'd just do some drills. So it was kind of, it wasn't really full time. It was just how they were, because they were getting paid for it. But then the, because I was a student then, Roland and Andy Currier and a few of the other boys, they say, oh, do you mind if we come to your student nights? So they come with me to my student nights. We'd be in Kingston and Vaults or something. And they love their Wednesday nights. So I got really matey with those boys. And then when the team was announced, I wasn't getting in first tick to that. Well, starting, I think Vaughan going was there. Some good players. But whenever there was a spot on the bench, Roland would go in and say, oh, I think Matt should be. So I was on the bench load purely because they wanted me to go out on a Wednesday night with them. And and it was a match bonus for me, which is as a student, you want that.
Oh, fair enough. Look, so you say you didn't play much in that first season, but you did contribute quite a lot in that Gloucester Cup game. Can you take us through that?
Yeah, that was a weird one because That came out of the blue. I had a few people down back in Llandwit Major at my house for New Year's. And then Clive called me on the day before New Year's Eve. Or even, yeah, the day before New Year's Eve, and said, oh, you're starting against Gloucester on the 2nd, I think it was. And I was just like, well, I couldn't say. No, it was the 4th. I just looked it up there. It was the 4th. So, yeah, they were staying for a week or something. So just and training was on the 2nd, that's right. So I had to just leave them there and go. And it was out of the blue that he picked me. I just thought, brilliant. So I just had to leave everyone in the house and travel down to London to play in that. And then it worked out quite well, that did for me.
Fair, but you also got injured in a second team game like the Druids. What happened then, and how did your recovery go?
Well, that's another one. It is a bit washy when I look back at exactly what year it was. But after that, Clive gave out. So I think he gave me a contract because I was playing enough for him to give me a contract. Which again, as a student, that was great.
Could you explain to our listeners what that meant, though? A contract, like we don't need to know sums, but like, would there be like a 2-year playing contract with like a salary or whatever it is?
Yeah, it would be like a retainer, a small retainer. But from coming out of uni, literally coming out of uni that year, 1998, 1999, then anything was great on top of a job, because you're spending most of your time at the club anyway, Tuesdays, Thursdays, sometimes Fridays, Saturdays, obviously, and then Friday nights if you're away. So it was good for me to have that because it helped me. But I got that contract. I think that must have been that year. But I injured myself in Roston Park playing for the Twos. And then this was me and Ron Ollie had a bit of a falling out. God rest his soul. But if anyone knew Ron Ollie, he just walked around going, fucking hell, all that. He loved it, but he just moaned all the time. And then I just thought, because I had a contract, I was insured. So I remember going into, I think it was a Kingston hospital, and seeing a surgeon. And he said, yeah, we'll get you in tomorrow. So that was fine. I was like, brilliant. I ripped my medial ligament. And he said, yeah, we're doing a arthroscopy, get you in there, fine. And as I was coming in the hospital the next day, Ron called me. He goes, what the fuck are you doing? I was like, what? I said, I'm just going in to get a knee up. He goes, have you done that? And I was like, well, I'm contracted. He goes, you're not on the fucking list. And I said, what do you mean the list? He said, we have to give a list to the insurers and you're not list. You're not, you can't do it. Get leave. You can't do it. And I said, well, I'm going in there now. And I ended up, honestly, he was going so mad. I ended up going, Ron, you're breaking up a bit. You're breaking up. So I can't hear you, Ron. I'm walking. And then I just went, literally, it was all booked in. So I kind of went in and had it done. And then he must have put my name on the list after, because when I walked into training, he just walked me and went, you fucking arsehole. And he laughed then. He didn't say anything, but that's the only way I could have it done.
No, fair enough. You know, don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness, isn't it?
He was brilliant like that. He had to be like that, but he was a lovable little moaner, put it that way.
Look, you know, Clive's done lots of things that, you know, in his coaching life. He's, you know, really respected as a coach. But as a young player, you sort of mainly a bench player really for Clive, because he kept getting loads of top players in, like Andy Millwood, Steve Pilgrim. And were you comfortable in that role? You know, just finding your way in senior rugby and trying to build a career.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of. He brought a lot of stuff with him as far as when I thought I was out of my depth there. Because if you're going in from playing National 3 to suddenly playing with Roland Phillips and Andy Currier and people like that, it is quite difficult. So you do question if you should be there or not. So I was always really nervous playing with Clive. I didn't, you know, after even the Gloucester game, I thought that would be, after scoring a couple of tries, that would set me down. But I played like a twat the next week. So he dropped me after that, I think. So I just felt there was quite a bit of pressure that I wasn't used to then. And it was full on. So, yeah. And all the other boys had obviously come from different professional backgrounds as far as like whether that's rugby league or rugby union. So it was I didn't feature as much as I wanted to, but I didn't get a proper run of it and get to, so I could build my confidence up on that one.
It's funny you mentioned
Andy Millwood.
Go on.
Well, that's one of these things where on stuff like this, I don't know, I'm not sure if I get into any trouble or not, but I'm not sure if there's like statutes and limitations on this, but this was a big one because I said I was going on the piss on Wednesdays with Roland and Andy Currier and Simon Ems and all these boys. Andy Millwood got signed. I can't remember exactly when, but he... Not that I know much about scrummaging, but everyone was saying, oh, he's brilliant. He's coming in as tight head and loose head. So he can do both. So everyone was looking forward to him coming. I will get bollocked for it, but it doesn't matter. So he came out on the Wednesday with us and he hadn't played a game then. It was early in the season, I think. And we, for some reason, we went and had some beers at London Welsh on the bench, like early hours of the morning. And then Roland was messing around with Bully and just was wrestling with him and just swept his leg jokingly and he just snapped his leg. And it was like, oh my God, everyone, we went to the hospital. So we all went to the hospital. I think he broke his tibia and fibula and everyone had to go, right, let's get out. We were sworn to secrecy, but I've just given it all up now. But so we went back in the morning to the hospital and Clive turned up going mental and he called me aside. He goes, what happened? And I'd been fed these lines from the boys. We were walking along and then he fell off the curb just outside the rugby. And he must have known something dodgy went on, but Roland felt like shit. The big sign-in that was going to help the scrummage and stuff. He pissed around and broke his leg. So that was a really bad kind of first introduction for Bully. For Andy Millwood.
Wow. Well, how long was he out for?
I was out for the whole season then.
Oh gosh.
It was a funny one. Well, it wasn't that funny for him.
No. So that was the end of sort of Clive Griffiths's era. Then you know Adrian Davis was appointed head coach. You must have been pleased there was a change in coach, and not that you didn't like Clive Griffiths, I'm just saying, but obviously a change of approach. And I think, you know, it became a bit more amateur with Adrian involved, maybe less pro players. Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, I'd agree with that because we did get promoted with Clive, even though there was a change in the leagues. I don't think we got up on merit, as in first or second. I think they took the third up in the end as well. So we got promoted on that one. So when he left... Because I was injured, that it was good for me that because it was like a fresh start then almost. Because I think I was injured quite a bit with Clive, so I probably needed that. And then Adrian came in. It's funny that actually, because you look back and think as players, you think the coaches. It's only when you get to my age now where you look back and think, shit, that Adrian was 29 or 30 when he took over at London Welsh. That's young. But we all saw him as a bigger coach. So it must have been quite tough to still kind of be in the player mentality zone and then be a coach. But he had a plan for London Welsh, Ado. And he actually did play out that plan really well. He went and got Matt Fitzgerald, I think, from Richmond, and then got a few other boys that he knew would bring this massive cohesion. And that's when it really kicked off as boys that just wanted to play for London Welsh. He was quite hard, Ado, and he started, you know, when he's talking about when you're training and if you walk into the water bottles, he goes absolutely mental. So he brought in a lot of kind of accountability for each player. And it was a really good start. So for me personally, well, he was one actually, because when I came back off the injury and then I went into the pre-season not injured, which was great because anyone that's played, you think, I've got a good 6 or 8 weeks here to get properly fit. I'm not nursing any injuries. And then he called me in work because he videoed some of the sessions and then he gave me a confidence. He says, listen, I was looking at you, your skills. Why haven't you been playing? You should be playing. I said I was injured. And then that was just the kickstart that I needed. And he just... He wrapped his arm around me and said, well, this is what you can do. And then I went and had an amazing season because he started me from the word go then.
That's fair to say, that season with Adrian was your best season for the club. You made 27 appearances. You were top try scorer with 25, which is a post-war record.
Yeah, that sounds good. Even though when we went on in January, went back to for Weasel's 50th, he came up to me, he goes, "I can't believe you got player of the year and player's player that year." And I went, "What?" He genuinely thought, because we were doing loads of 8, 9, 15s and I was scoring a lot. He genuinely thought, because he was passing it to me, he was going to get player of the year or player's player. And I was like, "Are you taking the piss?" Because afterwards, we ended up missing him out quite a bit because he was too slow now. So, yeah, that was a great season.
Yeah, you got the double that year, the player's player of the season. I think you got a supporters club player of the season as well, which is great. But you also had a dalliance with Wales Sevens. How did that come about?
Yeah, that's another weird one. I was working in Holmes Place, which is like Virgin Active, which is the gyms, in the Bentall Centre in Kingston. And I was in a meeting, and then I got a call from this guy called Adrian. So I picked up the phone and said, "Oh, Matt, it's Adrian from England Sevens. We're inviting you down to train." And I was like, "Well, thanks, but I'm Welsh." He goes, "Okay, but your mother's English." And I was like, "Right." And then I said, "Listen, I've got a tattoo of a Welsh dragon on my leg, and my dad would probably never speak to me again. So he goes, "Do you realise what I'm telling you?" I said, yeah, but I honestly can't. Thank you very much." It sounded quite arrogant. But then I phoned up my dad when I got home and said, "Oh, that happened." And then this is the lovely rugby network in Wales. Like, he must have gone up to the Llantwit Major and said, "Oh, Matt got asked to go England Sevens." And then literally the next day I had a call from Wales saying, "Do you want to come and train with us there?" I was like, "Okay." So off I went to, I don't know, where, Newport, I think we were training then. And played a couple of circuits there, which was an amazing experience.
So where did you play then? Did you go it wasn't like Edinburgh and London, was it?
Oh, no. I went for the big ones. The first one, we went to New Zealand. And then we meant to go to Australia, but that got cancelled because of something with Fiji. But that was my first proper kind of entrance into some good stand. Not that London Welsh wasn't a good standard, but everyone was full time in that squad apart from me. So I did feel completely out of place to start with. But when we got there, we played in Wellington. And it was funny because the first day they put on a big parade. So every team had their own float. And we went down this big avenue where there was loads of, like, or through the business district. And because we were Wales, we were at the back, but they put New Zealand at the back because they get more kind of, so we were waving at everyone. And you could see everyone go, "Not you, behind you. we were milking it at the front going, "Nah, thanks guys. Thanks for supporting us." But yeah, I played in that one and then got invited back to play in Hong Kong and Shanghai, which was amazing. Again, actually playing in Hong Kong that was a dream come true.
And are these, after you've finished playing at a place like New Zealand and Hong Kong, is it quite a sociable circuit? Because you say some of them were pro players, you weren't, but was it a good social afterwards?
Not really, because not in New Zealand, not at all, because it was like, as soon as you finish, you're back on the plane. And then, yeah, there was a professional thing around that. I did feel like I shouldn't have been there for the first bit. And then when you train with people like that, and then you start coming up to their standards a little bit. So I didn't feel out of place when I left there. It was only a couple of weeks where you're training day in, day out, twice a day. And then you do get better if you're around that. But then I think, yeah, Hong Kong was obviously quite a boozy one. Because that's what I was known for, but not never throughout the tournament, just the last day. And it was quite formal. So you'd have presentations with all the sides after Hong Kong. Not so, Shanghai was a nightmare. No one went, but yeah, that, and then back to playing in some kind of pissing wet day in against Henley, I think it was.
So your second season with Adrian then, I think you're still top try scorer, but you didn't play as often. Just when, because you were playing sevens as well during that season, or did you pick up a few injuries? Because you were missing certainly about 6 weeks in the autumn.
Yeah, when I had that good season, I did get an agent in the end, and they were saying, I wanted to play rugby then. I wanted to play full time. So I said that to Ado, and he said, yeah, if anyone comes in for you, I'll release you from this contract. So the agent was going around having a look, and then a few clubs came in and said, okay, let's see how the first couple of games go. And I remember, because we played Henley away, first game of the season, and I think a few scouts came down, and I didn't, you know, I kept my head on for that whole summer, and I was the fittest I've ever been. And then about, I think half an hour into the game, James Strong was going into touch with the ball, and he decided just to lob it behind his head, but went about five meters in the air. And that's one of those in slow motion where you think, I'm going to have to get this, but I'm opening myself up for a smash from anyone here. So as I took it with both arms up, I just got dumped and basically popped my left shoulder, and it just came out. So that was me done then for at least 2 months. And to be honest, I don't think I ever really got back to that level again, because, I think once you're out with one injury, a few little ones pop up, and it was a tough season, that one.
But at the end of that season, or during it, you also got selected for a team called Major Stanley 15. You know, what is this team, and what type of fixtures did they have?
Yeah, I think we played. It was a select 15, and you get pulled out of different places. It's like the Penguins, I think, the Major Stanleys. But I think we played Oxford, and Mikey Rea was playing, actually, and he had a great head on his shoulders as far as he knew the game, but he didn't have the legs, so he just put me all these holes all over the pitch. So I think I got man of the match for that one as well. In every angle that I was running, he was just popping me through. So there was quite a few big faces that were playing in that. Yeah, go on.
That's okay, because you know, after that second season, and you talk about you had an agent and that type of thing, you then decided to go to Rugby Lions. You know, what was the attraction of that move for you?
Well, I did have an ex, well, missus at the time that I was with for about 5 or 6 years. So she lived in Birmingham. So I did promise that I'd try and get a club up there. And that's, you know, loads of the boys would take the piss out of that and say that wasn't that, but I didn't go for anything but that. So I had a chat with Rugby Lions, and they signed me for that season. But oh my God, what a shower of shit that was. That was the worst move I've ever done.
Why?
I don't know if I didn't do the right kind of questions or the right due diligence before that. But I just thought they had it all sorted out. So as soon as I got there, and this is another thing that Lorne Ward would say, that I stole the club car to go to Rugby Lions. And I can't remember if I did or not, but he always says I did. But I can't remember how I was going to get up there. So I remember there is the hazy recollection of saying to Ron, the club car's in the Rugby Lions car park, so we had to go and pick it up. That sounds really bad, but I think that's what happened. But as soon as I got there, there's a guy called Malik, and he was like, oh yeah, he's not here. So then you're like, well, what? I was meant to have a flat, I was meant to have a car, and then it was just nothing like that. They didn't have anything ready. They didn't even have a squad, didn't really have a coach. So I knew from the first second, I thought, this is a stupid move.
And how long did you stay there, and how did you get out of the situation in the end?
Well, I literally, he came up to me and said, oh, we can't pay you this month, but there's a check that I can, you know, I can give you from my account that'll just tide you over, which was just like, this is not what I came up here for. I moved everything from London up there, and that check bounced. So I was just like, this is crazy. So I was just chasing him all the time. I don't know what happened there, but we were getting pumped anyway. Even though when London Welsh came to Rugby Lions, I wore my London Welsh socks under my Rugby Lions socks because I love London Welsh. So it was really weird to play against them, but I did score a great try against them.
and so did you stay a whole season there then?
No, I it's Christmas and I couldn't do it. Everything went wrong. I finished that relationship with my missus. And I just, one of the boys said, well, Stourbridge will sign you. So I was like, well, Stourbridge is a division below. I thought maybe even two. But I didn't know what to do. So I just then, I went and signed for Stourbridge and played some crazy games that season. And I just stayed in Birmingham, like probably trying to kind of reconcile stuff with my ex-missus, but that didn't work out. So I ended up moving to Stourbridge and living in this tiny little house in the middle of this estate, which I knew no one on. It was just a nightmare. So, I signed. They wanted me to sign again for the 2003-2004 season. And I did. I signed. And then I remember waking up like one morning and all I had was like a TV and a deck chair or something in the front room. And I was meant to be decorating this house that I was staying in. I just thought this. And then do you remember that Cheers program?
Yeah.
So that song, where everybody knows your name, where everybody. I just started watching that. I thought, what am I doing? So I had this kind of epiphany. I thought, I ain't doing this. I can't do it. So I literally got in the car, and this one I did steal. I jumped in the car and thought, no, I'm going back to London Welsh. I can't do it. And I thought, this is the most rock and roll thing I've ever done. I called Norman in the car, who was the dude that did all the contracts at Stourbridge, and he was like, you can't. I did it again. I said, you're breaking up a bit, Norman. Sorry, I've got to go. So I just drove the car back, and this is the weird bit, and this is how I remember it. Ado might not remember this, but it must have been a Tuesday or Thursday night, and I drove into the car park, and I drove around the back, parked up, and then I saw Adrian doing the water bottles behind the clubhouse. So I just walked over and he just looked at me and I didn't have to say anything. He goes, I'll give you a £2,000 contract. I went, fine. Thank you, mate. He goes, go get your boots. So I just ran, got my boots in the car and ran back over to all the boys. And then it was just like so nice to be back because that was probably the worst year I've ever had.
They must have ripped you though, because these are all your mates really, aren't they? They must have, what were you doing? Oh, glad to have you back, I'm sure. But they must have taken the mickey out of you as well.
They did. Of course they did. I needed them more than they needed me at that time. So, but then from then, what was that? 2003, 2004, 2005. That's when Adrian's kind of plan of this squad really took off when everybody wanted to come to London Welsh because of the boys there. So we were doing... Like we did a tour to, as I said, to LA and San Diego in 2004. And that just kind of put the icing on the cake of how much these boys would, 30 or 40 lads just loving spending time with each other and just having the big, biggest sing-alongs and playing really good rugby. But it was close. I'm still good mates with like loads of that first team now. And also Dave Ramsey, who's in the seconds. No, he's not. I love him. I had to get that in.
But how did you get time off work and who funded these tours? That's the thing, because it's sort of an amateur sort of semi-pro club, who organised it all? Because Mod Likes would come on the tour as well, wouldn't he?
Yeah, they'd all more like that's the other thing about the London Welsh is when you look at all the Alakadoos like Terwin, Morlice, Jan, Brian, Dav. Big Dav, they've all got a part in all that. They were actually brilliant. So we it was all holiday, but we used to do these big fundraising kind of balls. It sounds really bad because I don't know how much went to charity, but we had a good kitty when we went to these places, we all paid. It was like we all paid every month for the tickets and stuff. But Ado came in at the start of the 2003-2004 season and said he was up for this. And everyone just said, yeah. And then it just kicked off. People were coming to join London Welsh just to go on the tours at the end of the season. I think that really did bring the boys back together.
Yeah, I think Dylan P mentioned, sorry to interrupt you, Dylan P mentioned, I think, they had these balls at Wandsworth, I think they had about 800 people there.
Yeah, no, they someone should have taken that on as an annual thing, because we would work behind the bar, we'd have ice sculptures, we'd all kind of black tie stuff, and it was brilliant. We'd have to work, and we'd put a shift in to get all the stuff organised and all the clearing up and stuff, but it was all about us going away, though, whether that was a couple of weeks later for the boys. But it was a great night for quite a few of the people, the supporters or whatever, or half the Roston Park and Wasps and Richmond. Loads of rugby boys used to love going out to that ball.
You were offering to recreate it and organise it, Matt?
No, I'd let you up. Too old for that now, mate. But... No, I give it a go. Yeah, it was really successful. It was really successful. But no, it's funny because I didn't get back to playing anywhere near what I played in the sevens. But as far as the away trips and the fun we had over those couple of years, it was amazing. You know, I've played in not many other clubs, but I don't know if that's just the norm, but I don't think it was. That was a proper time. So Fitzy and Adrian did well to kind of get that together. It is now still with the Red Herrings. It's still such a close-knit group. Well, I say they're close-knit groups. You always have the backs versus the forwards. and then that, when I was saying about Dav, he used to be on the Tannoy, Dav. Do you remember that?
I don't actually know. But carry on, it's okay.
Well, he used to love the Welsh. So he used to have a thing for like Gary John. And this is, I used to, when we used to play in around that time, 2004, as a fullback, if you walked in and it's pissing down with rain and you're at home and you're up against some other massive pack, whether that's like Moseley or I don't know, Worcester or whoever, and then you walk in and everyone's like, right, we've got to keep it tight. You think, oh, this is going to be so boring, this game. So sometimes you just sit there just chatting to the wingers about what you're doing later and trying to like smother yourself in mud just to look, just so you look as if you're involved. But it's always a forwards, and I always remember it's like Ada would make a change on 70 minutes or something and bring off Adam Jones and stick on Gary John. And then I remember looking at all these forwards, and they used to kick the shit out of them, and they had their blood on each other. And I remember looking at the forwards thinking they look absolutely exhausted, but they put a proper shift in, and say we'd won the game. I remember thinking, nothing can take away from that moment when they're in that little huddle and we're not involved as backs. And then Dav would come on the town and said, this week's London Welsh man of the match, Geraint John. And I'd be like, how's he got that? And they just look and think, oh, well, maybe something can take away from that.
No, it's brilliant. Look, and those like last couple of years at London Welsh, you played your 100th match and scored your 50th try for the club. So amazing memories. I think in the last season, you just avoided relegation, didn't you?
Yeah, that was tough. That was when there was a lot of money coming into other clubs. And then we were up against a lot of full-time sides, and we weren't full-time. The way that Ado structured it was there was no one full-time. A lot of the boys had city jobs. Not that they're more important than other people, but we were still training only, Tuesday, Thursday. So you could see that. So we just scraped away and didn't get relegated.
But look, Adrian was coach here for 5 years, and he'd managed to get this sort of togetherness.
Yeah.
And recruited, a bunch of players who, 20 years later are still tight. It's quite remarkable, really.
I think that was a plan, and fair play to him. He kind of executed that plan to perfection, really. So, and everyone will talk the same, whether that's like Steve Ravenscroft, Bottoman, Richie Elliott. They're the committee for the red herrings that they won't let me get involved in. But everyone says the same thing, you know, whether that's and obviously Langers was part of that as well. Mark Langley, but he again forwards coach, so he didn't really speak to me a lot.
Okay, you know, at the end of last season, Adrian left and Martin Jones came to club. And this is where you left London Welsh as well then, isn't it? Because a lot of people left London Welsh because, you know, a few went to Scottish and a few went to Rosslyn Park. Which way did you end up going to?
Well, it's a shame that was, because I swear, I don't know if he thinks this, but Martin Jones, there was some history there. Because I remember, it must have been going back to like 97, where I got picked for the Welsh Exiles and we played in Amsterdam. And there was me, like Andrew Lewis, which is a Swansea boy, and Dave Muckett was the captain. So we played in Amsterdam and then we beat this team like 100-0 or something, because they didn't play rugby. And then we found out the team we were playing on the Saturday beat that team 50-0. So Martin Jones came and said, right, he was coaching. He said, right, no one's having drinks on Friday. And then Dave Muckle just went around and said, come on, man. So he got all the boys to basically go and have some beers. And I don't think Martin Jones liked that, but he blamed me for it. So I swear, that's what I, but maybe he didn't rate me or not, but there was something there, because I played 20 odd games for London Welsh. And then I had the call from Martin Jones then when he took over Rado. And he loved that call. He called me up and he was like, "Hey, right, Martin Jones." Everyone does the accent, so Matt Jones from London Welsh. Afraid there's not a spot for you here this year, Matt. Just like that, and I was like, "What? What do you mean?" He said, "Nothing. No contract for you." And I was like, "I played 20 games last year, Martin." And he went, no. And I wish I hadn't said this bit, because then I said, oh, what, can you not even offer me a pay as you play? And he went, no, can't even do that, mate. Take it easy. And that was it. So I thought, oh, that was a bit weird. But so then I went, yeah. And then Rory Greenslade-Jones had gone already to London Scottish. And then he basically got me there to play London Scottish, and that was probably annoying for the boys that were at London Scottish, because loads of London Welsh people made up coming over then, and then just to get London Scottish, they were in Division 3 South, so it was weird going from that standard to another one. So you'd just be winning 60-70-0 every week, and just the Welsh know what it's like now, because when you go down that much, it's a long slog back, and it's patience, isn't it? So.
It is. And how long were you there for then, Scott? You said just the one season, or did you play for?
No, I was there for a few seasons. Yeah, I was there for about two or three seasons, and then I did my ACL playing in Mumbles Sevens, and that was me done.
After that, no more rugby, Matt. That was you retired, done.
No,
then.
I think, what was that? 2000. Yeah, I was 31, 32 doing an ACL. I just didn't get back. I did go back and start training again with Scottish, but. I didn't make it back to playing at all then, really. No, that was it.
And so what was the plan then, post rugby? Because obviously when you were playing, you were still you mentioned earlier you work in the gym, but what was the plan career wise for you?
It was always I joined a company in like 2004. And I got quite a few of the boys, I work in the gaming sector, so I got quite a few of the London Welsh boys to actually join that sector in the end. So it was never a thing that I was just playing, apart from Rugby Lions, which I wouldn't even class that. I suppose you are full-time there, because that's where you get your money from, or your bounce checks or whatever. But I was never really just rugby. I was always working.
Yeah.
I just missed, like, as far as when I know that Clive offered that contract, but that you couldn't live on that. It was always, it's mainly been part time all the way through, to be honest. So, yeah, it wasn't a hard transition. That was just working just without rugby.
So, you're working gaming. What do you do in gaming then exactly?
Just consulting with different companies about what products they've got, and quite a lot on responsible gaming now, trying to get them to use different solutions to stop people from gaming now.
Okay, because the addictive issues, you mean, that sort of thing, yeah?
Pardon? Yeah, exactly.
Game at Sandon. Have you always done that in London? Have you moved abroad with it?
Yeah, I went to the Philippines in 2012 and lived there for a couple of years. Well, I did play for the Vets over there, for the Nomads in the Philippines. So I played quite a bit of tens there, because they have this thing called the Manila Tens at the Nomads, or they used to. I don't think it's there anymore. So I got back into it. Rugby's brilliant to meet new people. Never liked those boys at London Welsh, though, but it's great to have some commonality when you go to new places.
Definitely. And now you're obviously back in the UK. I'm not sure if you mentioned you got family, things like that. Have you got children, things like that? Yeah,
I have, man. I'm an old dad now. I've got a 4-year-old girl and a 1-year-old boy. I'm 47, so I've got to keep myself fit just to look after those two. I'm down near Hastings, or Battle, down this way now.
Oh, nice. Look, Matt, it's been brilliant catching up with you. And to hear all the stories, things like that. Your overall playing record for London Welsh is 110 appearances, 50 tries, 262 points. That's some career with London Welsh, isn't it?
Oh, it's up there with Ronaldo, isn't it?
But your celebration is better.
Yeah.
But look, when you look back at your time at London Welsh, and you probably mentioned a bit during this sort of our conversation, but when you look back, what are your sort of memories of the club?
It's just that there's so many different phases. I've been lucky enough to go through the Goslin phase, where it was different and it was as good, but that was proper. That was more Welsh. There was more of a Welsh contingent there. And then obviously the Clive Griffiths was more professional type to it. And then obviously the Asian. So I've been, the three, they're different, but I look back with massively fond memories about with London Welsh, whether that, not just the tours and the social side, but it was quite painful actually going back to that, to watch London Welsh go down the league. We kind of knew about Belly, I think it was, it's Scottish, so I don't know what happened there. I'm not privy to any of it, but it was sad to see that happen to London Welsh after it being such an amazing club, and it is, hopefully it gets back up there, because some of the, it's got the foundation to do that. I know it achieved loads when I left, which I don't know if that's always a joke, but yeah, what, 2015, 16, I think they started playing some, they won the British and Irish Cup. That's up in the John Dawes room. Yeah. So, yeah.
We had 2 years in the Premiership. I think, we moved to Oxford for a bit. I think, but, I'm a current director of the club, and look, it's been amazing the journey we're on. And what we're trying to be is a sustainable rugby club. And we're playing National 3. We're improving season on season. And it's, rugby is rugby. We've got a great spine of Welsh lads in the team, but we welcome anyone to play rugby. And we're progressing as a club again. And it's a delight to see and delight to be part of. And what we want to do is to have, people who are connected to the club at any stage to come back and just sample it again.
Yeah.
Because it's bloody brilliant standing on the touchline watching those play.
I totally agree, because I had a good chat with Rev actually on Richie Elliott's 50th, and he was saying the same thing. It's not that everyone's trying to get back to old school, but they're just getting these boys to enjoy coming to London Welsh. Some of it does involve beer, because it does, but then it's a different world. So it might be that people don't want to do that, but the camaraderie is what they come for. And he looked as if that was trickling back through, and there were people doing songs. And as soon as you get that kind of little formula with young lads, whether in uni or new jobs, and they look forward to coming and doing stuff on a Saturday and playing some good rugby, that's a winning formula. That
it is, and some of the characters you mentioned are still there, like Nigel Rees, Ted Wynn, your Pete Lowe's around the place. Even Edgar Thomas comes to the Metal Match Days. I'm obviously trying to get a lot of the younger lads and younger people involved, but it's still a great place to be on a Saturday.
I swear Terwin took the piss out of me, and I didn't even know it for 20 years, because you just think they're just there to watch rugby. They've all got their own banter, but he came up to me, he goes, "We've got a lovely blazer for you, Math." And he gave me this massive, big, green London Welsh blazer. And I felt really bad not wearing it. So I used to wear it everywhere. And it was like I was in Big, that movie.
Yeah.
And people used to, or if I went into Richmond, they'd go, "Oh, where's the bus?" and all this shit. And I thought, I can't let Terwin down. When I saw him on the last month at Richie Ellis, he walked in, he was pissing himself. He goes, "You still got that green blazer?" I said, "Was that a piss take?" "Of course it was." I said, "Oh, you... Oh, he's absolutely done me on that."
Oh, no, brilliant. Look, Matt, it's been great chatting to you. Thank you for taking us down memory lane. Glad you enjoyed your time at London Welsh, and look forward to catching up with you in person when you're at the club, hopefully on April 6th.
Yeah, thanks, Gareth. Thanks for that. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.